It's Monday, November 6, 2006, and you're listening to episode 26 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 53 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan. On the mics, our mic ninjas are yes. Chad.
Howdy.
Adam.
Hi.
And Dawn.
Hello.
Her baby still isn't talking to us yet, so I'm not
going
to...
And guess what?
It's a boy.
It is a boy.
It's a boy.
Yeah, you guys just found that out, what, this past week?
Friday.
Found it on Friday.
Yesterday.
You know, coming off of this series we did on bad GMing and bad playing habits, someone pointed out one that we forgot, and this is a big one that we left off. The player who can't take his turn, where you get to this person's like, what are you doing? And they spend 20 minutes, I got to think about this.
They were like the last on the initiative list, and they weren't doing anything. And then it's like you ask them, what are you doing? And they come out of a dream.
Yeah. And
what?
In some cases, there may have even been a huge round of other actions leading up to this, where they had tons of time to think about what they're doing. You get to them, and they have no idea.
I think the opposite extreme of that is the player who takes too many turns. From a role-playing standpoint, Dan and Adam are role-playing, and they're going, you know, it's back and forth, and they're in the room alone, and then you get the person who's like, oh, well, I say this. Well, wait a minute, are you in the room? No, I'm not. I say it in my own room. And then they're talking again, and then they're like, okay, what room are they in? Well, they're in the armory. Well... I need to go to the armory. Why do you suddenly need to go to the armory, you know?
Because that's where the action's taking place, jerk.
Obviously.
Don't question me.
In terms of slow actions, I've seen this in every game. The worst game I've seen it with is Battletech.
Oh.
You get the person who can't decide on their move. They're standing over here in one corner of the map. There's nothing going on. The mechs around them haven't moved or nothing's really changed. They had all this time to think about, but they just sit there with their finger on the mech. One, two, no. One, two, turn. No. That, no.
You know who else had that problem was Tim, when he played Games Workshop games, he would play orcs, and orcs are the low-quality, high-quantity army. Basically, you outnumber your opponent 3-1, so you have tons and tons and tons of troops out there. Well, he would be like, okay, I'm going to take one, I'm going to move it. And then I don't like Rome, so I'm going to move one model.
Yeah, we're talking about
and it's
aggression.
Like, he's got 30 models to move, and it's just like, just... Move! It doesn't matter! Just move them all forward!
In Battletech, I finally defeated this with a simple 10-second rule.
Yeah.
That if somebody's taking too long, I just started counting down from 10. And if I hit 1, your character, your mech, whatever the game is just standing there staring, just like you are. Because apparently he or she was also too confused to figure out what to do this round and just move the game on.
Round. They're
in such
happening.
Awe of what the orcs are doing around them.
And I also want to mention that two of our forum users were just begging for mentions on the show. That would be Joe Junior
Shabadoo,
greatest name on the forum, and Mr. Plug were asking for honorable mentions.
So
on
we are
the
giving him a Mr. Plug.
Yes, we are.
Props to the Simpsons reference as well.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, who I should be Mr. Plugging is whoever it was that mentioned to me about the people who can't decide to take their turn, and I sitting here cannot remember who that was.
The person we should actually name.
The person we should be plugging. We don't care.
Too much O'Fallon ale for you.
Oh, yeah, another round of that delicious O'Fallon gold beer.
Not that they're paying you or anything.
No. Well, not that Stumpy's was for 3 episodes either.
Yeah, we gotta get back into that.
All right, well, next week we will be back at Stumpy's then, and all will be well in the world. We wanted today to talk about character creation. We actually have a couple kind of unrelated topics. This is sort of a small topic roundup.
It's a cornucopia of topics.
You did not just go there.
He did.
You were feeling so festive.
Sir.
What, 2 weeks till
Thanksgiving? It is November.
Festive. Now, there's a politically correct word for it.
That's right.
I meant gay. I thought in the interest of the diversity of our listeners that I would go with festive.
RuPaul is particularly festive.
Huh.
Anyway, so I guess what we got coming up, we're going to start in a couple weeks here, the series on game creation.
Right.
And we're talking about world design and rule system design, all kinds of related stuff.
We're also going to get really specific with this,
too. Yes, very specific.
Like, we're going to create, from start to beginning, one game.
Start to beginning.
Did I just say that?
That's zero to zero. Here we go, blazing into the future.
Oh, wow.
Watch this. Zero to nothing in 3 seconds.
Huh.
Man, you need 3 seconds? I bet we can do it in two if we try.
Too much of fun gold for you.
Maybe.
Yeah, so when we do this series on game design, as Chad was starting to say before he got in his own way, we are going to create an actual playable game out of this that we're going to, so to speak, we're going to show you our work. Right. We're going to talk about rule systems, and then we're going to put up a couple little charts and graphs, giving you a simple idea of what the math looks like. We're going to create a world, and we're going to put up several pages of setting.
Yep.
And by the time this is done, it's going to be a bit stripped down and a bit rough, but you guys will have an actual playable game. I don't want to promise this because it's still a little bit in talks, but we are considering, after that, going back and fleshing this out to a full-blown version 1 or version 2 or whatever you want to call it, and actually trying to get it published.
And we will also publish our rejection letters we get, too.
We will read those on the show.
You know suck. Talent hacks. And please stop submitting this piece of crap product.
And then we will tell you this jerk is at 123 Elm Street.
Nice.
His wife's name is...
I don't understand why this publisher did not want my Enterprise Kirk Picard / LARP role-playing game.
And what I do want you mean? Your Enterprise... Picard slash.
And we do mean slash LARP.
Can you?
No, I can't.
It's so beautiful.
I spent the past 5 minutes putting that statement together in my mind. It's awful.
Yeah, from start to beginning?
From start to beginning.
The first adventure is Kirk and Picard made it so.
They did not boldly go.
Did you say baldly go?
Well, Shatner does have a toupee. They have both baldly gone. Shatner has let himself boldly go.
Wow.
This baldly going places painful. Is much cooler than boldly going places.
At least they're not baldly. That would really be slash then.
Explicit.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether we may have to edit that one out.
I'll give it another beep. The last beep was so popular.
Yeah, the beep.
No beeping.
Yeah, it's at least the user.
Remind me never to cuss on this podcast again.
At least the listener defecation.
You know, it's
at least the listener death.
It sounded fine when I made it. I had the headphones on. I listened to it. It sounded fine. There was a beep last episode.
Right.
If you're still alive and not dead of a heart attack,
right.
I
will stroke
really
out.
Apologize.
Yeah, I was listening to it at work, and I hit that beep. By the time the beep was over, I was sitting an inch higher in my seat. I'm just going to leave. It was horrible.
Amazing.
Scared
what made
the
have a
crap out
so
of
many
me.
People. Again, I am very sorry about that.
I thought it was loud, and I always keep my audio setting really low.
It sounded good, but
it's your fault, Chad.
I'm not a trained audio engineer. I'm not an Audacity expert.
You should have listened to it first.
I did listen to it. When I ran it through, it sounded great.
Okay.
I mean, when his headphones were sitting on the table, it didn't bother him in the least.
Like, why are my eyes on the table next to my headphones?
All right, let's move on.
All right, so anyway, we are moving on, anyways, over the next couple of weeks into a big thing on game design. So leading up to that, we're going to do some small topic roundups, just hit some of these loose ends we've had on our list of ideas.
I like how he says we're going to hit these loose ends. Like, these are ones that we've had waiting in the wings. Like, we haven't
been sitting here
for the past 20 minutes trying to think of, what should we talk about today?
It was 20 minutes here. It was 20 minutes at the restaurant. Yep. What are we talking about tonight? You know, I haven't given it much thought. I'm holding back on all this stuff.
We got all this stuff. We got to wait till John comes in. We got to wait till this series comes in. We got to wait till this.
That's great, but that doesn't get us there.
And the pitchers of beer certainly didn't help
either. We actually
have.
All right, I'm going to make a double confession here. Confession one. This does kind of serve a filler role before we get into the big series. Now, confession two.
Well, we got that out on the table.
Confession two, though, is this actually has been in the hopper for a while, because way back when we did a lot of brainstorming on the big board, typed it up into a little text file, which we read from, and now we use the big board for the actual show outlines, which shows outlines for the previous two shows, because we didn't write an outline for the show.
Right.
But
can you tell?
Yeah, Adam's all uncomfortable. He's feeling all shifty. There was an F in that, so you don't need to believe it. But anyway, so these are ideas we've been wanting to do for a while. It's like Chad's saying that right now we've got all these big, great things on the horizon, but they're part of series that we can't start just yet, because we're timing these around other things. We've got guests joining us for the next two shows, one of which may be released out of sequence, so you may not hear them back to back. But we've got guests coming and stuff, so we have to start these at a particular time.
Yeah, we're interviewing Gary Gygax.
Yeah, we are. He is coming out. Every major name in RPGs is going to be here.
That's right. Like Monty Cook and Gary Gygax and
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby. There is no name in RPGs bigger than Bill Cosby.
The interview with the guy who wrote Shadowrun is just going to be like,
You done over there?
Yeah, I'm done.
Was Bill Cosby hitting him?
Yeah.
I'd pay to see that.
I bet you would. Oh, in case anybody takes us seriously, we're not really interviewing.
Yeah, if you followed this show outside of jokes like that, I don't think we've mentioned a single name in the industry in the entire history of this show. Outside of the one product review Tim did in, like, episode 2.
Yeah, and directly after that long list of names, I was like, man, who are these people?
I don't know these people. They don't show up to my games.
Yeah, that's Gary Gygax done for me lately.
The people that have shaped my gaming life, it's the people who show up to the games. It's not always big news. Anyway.
That's right.
Let's get down to brass tacks here.
Oh, new phrase. You know what's funny?
That phrase for 20 years.
You know what's funny? I use a phrase once, and so it's a tired phrase.
It is. It's because you're so old-fashioned.
Yeah, it's because of your voice.
I know. So. Carly gives me crap because I say hootenanny, which is like slang from the 1940s or whatever.
Whoa! Yeah. She goes, come on, Grandpa. Let's move on. Let's get down to brass tacks.
If I had my druthers.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
I cannot deal. This is like the old podcast.
All right.
Middle-aged people with life crises.
Chad, unlisted perks and penalties. If you have a character creation system, like, let's say, the World of Darkness stuff, Vampire the Masquerade.
Right.
You are allowed to take perks that cost you certain points and penalties that gain you points. So you could say, for example, that you're afraid of running water as a vampire.
Right.
And that gains you points that you could spend on allowing you to be whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. But allows you to be something cool for a vampire, like you dress in all black.
No way.
And you look really good in a tuxedo. You know, that sort of, you're extremely...
Dude, I don't need to be a vampire for that.
Nice.
Now, you, however, say that you have gotten a lot of mileage out of using this sort of thing, either using perks and penalties in games that aren't listed, or even using perks and penalties in games that aren't supposed to have perks and penalties. Like, for example, let's say we're in D&D and someone says that, well, I'm willing to take double damage from iron for whatever strange reason. What would
that
you give me for
would
that?
Would be a strange reason.
I know, but I'm trying to think, that's kind of a strange one.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
Let's say you're playing a game like Battletech and someone says that I'm willing to be bound to a wheelchair.
Well, we did in the last Battletech game.
You were wanted.
Yeah, I was wanted. I was a wanted man.
And I remember a game that we played, I took a serious physical handicap for a bonus.
What was that serious physical handicap? Clubfoot?
No, it wasn't. It was like that. It was like my leg was messed up somehow, and I couldn't run. I could kind of limp around, and I was a gimp in the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
And everybody treated me... nobody trusted me. Yeah, I looked shady. Nobody trusted me.
You just got to park your
horse
really
I think
close.
He had another disadvantage, too, of that he just looked shady.
Yeah, nobody would trust me.
Yeah, he could come up to you, you've never met him before, and he could tell you the truth, you might not believe him.
People who knew me
would
not believe me.
Now, someone could come back and say, well, you could accomplish the same thing with a low charisma score, and I've got a whole rant there.
Oh, yay, numbers.
But, yeah, well, no, not even that, but the people, whereas you're gaming, somehow, strangely, strength and dexterity is always through the roof, and they have some reason why dexterity should be low. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm just the ugly outcast, or nobody trusts me, and so they
charisma.
Yeah, in other words, you're just trying to tax that one attribute to make yourself a bigger badass. But you're not talking about that.
No.
You're talking about something that goes above and beyond just.
It is an inherent mistrust. I mean, charisma will only take you so far. You can only be so good looking.
And this
and
is
personable.
Very specific.
And I was good looking and personable.
Right.
I was a prime minister. I was respected, but they didn't trust me.
This is also goes further.
It's like
than
Christopher Walken as a babysitter.
Yes, exactly.
It's not that he's ugly. There's nothing wrong with him.
There's nothing wrong with him. He looks very respectable.
Who would trust Christopher Walken to watch their children?
I would trust Christopher Walken with my life.
Would you?
He would eat your baby.
All right. I know. I would watch.
Christopher Walken.
So do I.
He can
so
dance.
Do I.
Have you seen his straight dance?
His charisma is really high. I really, really like him. But he would eat your baby. No doubt in my mind.
Would eat my baby.
You know,
baby
a man's got to
eat.
A man's got to eat.
If rallies has taught us nothing else, it's that Christopher Walken has to eat babies.
Getting back to the topic, though.
Yes, please.
Right.
We
we're also talking about using perks and flaws in systems that don't have perks and flaws.
Yeah.
And that's what we did a lot. Like, it, say, in D&D or whatever. I don't know if newer versions have perks and flaws.
Oh, feats, talents, but not feats. Really, no.
It's different. It's in every single one of the games I've ever ran, I always tell my players, if you want something that goes above and beyond just the normal character creation that we just did, come see me. Make a deal. I love to make a deal.
I think that's probably the one thing that I really enjoy about your games.
Mm.
There's always a deal to be made.
Yep. If you want to be superpower, you want to be able to fly through the air, you want to have whatever, millions of wealths or whatever, come see me.
I think there's a whole human element.
There's
a whole human element that has to happen, because on pen and paper, you can kind of...
Right.
You can twink that system into your advantage.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with the GM,
mm-hmm.
and the GM knows what his game is going to be, and you say, hey, I want to fly, the GM is like, you may not fly in my game.
All right.
I just want to make one quick point, too. When I do it as well, I always say, every single perk you take, every single flaw you take, I want a reason. I want the character, I want that to be part of the character. It's just like, I want to have the ability that I'm a rogue, and so I want this ability where I get extra damage when I come out of the shadows and stab somebody. Well, I want a reason for that. Beyond just, oh, well, I'm a rogue and I just practice that. Or I have an impalement impairment where my leg is messed up.
Impalement would be an impairment.
An impairment, yes. I have an impairment where my leg is messed up, like Adam. Okay, great. You know, it does these combat stats things, it does these in-character things, but I want a reason. I want a story. I want you to add that into your story and make it to where it fleshes out your character more.
I'm completely in favor of this, because I think one of the things, I like the rule systems, you know, certainly mm-hmm. of the people that sit at these tables, I've been probably about
the crunchiest person as here.
Yeah, which even that is as far from hero system.
Right.
But of the people that are sit here, I'm probably the crunchiest. And I like the concept of the balance and such consistency that the rule systems introduce. However, I think there's a danger when you stick too tightly to them.
Mm-hmm.
The rule systems can only represent so many things. And if you get a guy who suddenly says, look, I'm willing to have a bounty on my head and have people come after me in the game, what would you give me for that? I think that's something you should be willing to work with. And so I'm glad that's something you've introduced in your games. It's something I'd be willing to do as well, though I rarely get approached about that.
I would have approached you about that in the last game we run if it was an option.
See,
well, it's always an option. I'll always do it. I just don't typically have people ask me for it.
I didn't solicit. My players know that I do it because we've been gaming for years and they know that I'm into it. But how I got them into it was I started dangling things in front of them. It's just like, oh, your character's like this. Well, I know this is going to happen to the game. Would you like this? And they hold up the carrot. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I'd really like that. Well, if you want it, you got to pay for it. The reason why I did this was to make the people flesh out their characters. That was my entire move. I didn't care that they had powers or disadvantages. That made no difference to me as a game master.
Yeah, the rules didn't matter.
Yeah. things like rules didn't matter. I wanted them to add things to their character. And so that's why I did what I just explained earlier, where they had to incorporate the perks and flaws into their stories.
Let's talk about two potential problems I see coming up with this. Let's say someone sitting out there listening to us is either a newer GM or just doesn't usually do things like this. They don't know how to implement this without it getting the best of them. Here's two big problems.
38 flaws, 48 perks. And then you have the guy who has a sexually transmitted disease, is in a wheelchair, has one eye, his hair's on fire, he can't breathe air, he has to be in a bubble.
But he kills with a look.
Yes, but he's Charles Xavier, and he can melt your mind.
But that one eye.
Yeah. That one eye.
You know, I didn't even think about that.
There's no character at all.
I didn't even think about that, but that is a big possibility. Actually, you mentioned two in there. One is a big problem is don't get so laden with perks and flaws.
Yes.
That your character is completely unquantifiable. I mean,
yes,
it's just
exactly.
The second thing is, and someone mentioned this on the forums, and I completely agree with this, that they have seen people where the flaws on a character become the character.
Right.
Where, let's say you have a character who's bound to a wheelchair, and just like the Freak Show characters we talked about way back when, they allow the fact they're bound to a wheelchair to become the character. They use this as an excuse to develop no personality, no whatever, just to say, hey, I'm bound to a wheelchair. That's who and what I am.
See, that's what, and I'll use Adam's example of the gammy leg that he had. Actually, that was from a Dork Tower cartoon. Like, I may be a one-eyed, one-armed gnoll with a gammy leg, but I'm the best one-eyed, one-armed gnoll with a gammy leg. Something like that. I'm probably misquoting it. No, he wasn't handicapped man. You know, that wasn't his character class. It wasn't his personality. He wasn't handicapable, right? It was a prop, so to speak, right, that he used in his role-playing.
And there was reasons within the story, too.
Yeah, why it was exactly.
All right, let me mention the two things I came up with that I think are the big potential downfalls I'd like to offer some help to a GM on how to get around. Outside of the two we just mentioned, which is don't let this become the character and don't have there be so many you lose sight of the character. The first thing I came up with is qualitative balance. You say to me, I want another point of strength. And I say, okay, we'll take mm-hmm. another point off another attribute. This is really easy to balance, plus right. one, minus one. It is a quantitative balance. But this is a qualitative balance. Yes. Is being bound to a wheelchair worth having a huge trust fund that allows you to buy anything you want? There's this qualitative balance. The only advice I can think to give is GMs, hopefully, if you follow the kinds of recommendations we give, on that first sitting, you have some idea where this game is headed. You've got a group template. You know what the group's into. You've got a campaign outline that tells you generally kind of what you're trying to accomplish here. You should know up front, is the guy being bound in a wheelchair really going to be a minor inconvenience versus the trust fund that's going to allow him to bribe and steal his way to the end of the plot in 20 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other advice for helping someone weigh a qualitative balance?
Well, I think that a very quick and dirty thing you can do is first limit the amount of perks and flaws they can get.
Yeah, our games, it's no more than three.
Yeah. Yeah, three on like
and the
each
third
side.
One is you're a paraplegic on fire.
Yeah. And that's another thing is I step them up too. The first perk and the first flaw are generally very light and low key. Second one are stepped up. Third one, I mean, it get to the point where players would be asking for the third one and it's just like I would offer them something. And they would be like, "Wow, how can you even offer that to me? That's going to unbalance your game." I'm like, "Don't worry about it." Because this is what you have to pay. And they're like, I don't want to pay that. You know, I don't want... It's not that it'll ruin my character. It'll make it to where that is just... That's more than they're willing to pay.
Right. I think, though, actually, you gave a pretty good piece of advice buried in that, which is keep it small.
Gee, thanks.
No, I think you gave a separate piece of advice buried in the point you were shooting at. Because the point you were shooting at was step it up.
Yeah.
The smaller piece of advice you gave in there that I really like for newer GMs is start small. Mm-hmm. That if you've never done this before for this game, don't let someone trade you. They're a narcoleptic with sleep apnea, but they can think death rays.
Right.
Don't start off with that. Start off with something simple, like you speak with a lisp and come mm-hmm. up with some game effect for that. And in return, I'll double your starting money. Yeah. Start with something small to see how this is working out until you get a feel for it. Don't give players something without thinking it through.
Yeah.
It's real easy to agree to something and you regret it later.
A good test of this is if the player immediately jumps on it, like you offer it and boom, they're on it, you've offered too much.
Yeah, that's why you always make the offer for the good thing first to see what the reaction is. And I'm giving away state secrets here, but you offer the good thing first, see how they react to it, and then based on the reaction, that's how you notch up the price.
Now, the other thing I came up with, the other potential pitfall, and this is purely a GM problem, mm-hmm. This is a self-inflicted GM problem, so I don't know if we need to give a lot of advice on fixing it, but I just want to mention it, is flaws that never get used.
Yeah.
You have a guy who's a vampire who won't cross running water.
But there's never any running water in
the middle
game.
Of a city in the desert.
Yeah.
And there's never any running water.
Unless that city is Venice, this is never coming
or
up.
Or you get players to take advantage of it. They say, you know what? I'm going to be the guy, and this is the example you gave earlier. This is not how it played out, but I'm going to be the guy who has a bounty on his head, but I know the GM's never really going to send anyone after me.
Oh, you want to bet?
Or if they do, it's going to be a joke. It's not like they'd kill the party, so it's just going to be some little inconvenience. Hey, it's more XP.
You right. ask Phil about that.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, Chad, I know it didn't play out this way, but Game Masters, if you give somebody a flaw, make it a flaw.
Yeah.
Send bounty hunters against them that really have a chance of killing them.
And on the other hand, well, and Adam and Dawn can both attest to this. when I put a flaw in a character, uh-huh. I twist that knife, and I twist it hard.
Yeah, every game.
I guess you can hit the flip side where you twist the knife so hard.
Yeah, twisted, yeah, I mean,
it becomes 10 times.
Well, it depends on the benefit.
It's like I'm in a wheelchair, and there is not a building in the city, in the game, anywhere that doesn't that has an elevator.
Yeah,
everything is stairs.
Well, again, it depends on the benefit.
Right.
But on
everything
the
is stairs. You son of a bitch.
That's an evil, evil thing to do.
On the other hand, too, you have to give them perks that have a point.
Yeah, are applicable. The same way that their flaws have to be applicable, the perks have to be
their
applicable.
Their perk is that they have a get-out-of-jail-free card. Let's define that. They have a network of connections. They know judges. Their family's a crime family, and everybody's paid off.
That never comes up.
But guess what? You're in the woods.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks.
So yeah, so be sure anything you're handing out is qualitatively meaningful, so that otherwise no point to it.
Again, and you know what? We give a lot of warnings to this.
I think it's great.
It's very easily abused. It can unbalance a game. It's wonderful. If used correctly, it's wonderful.
This is going to be another one of those things where you really have to know your players, too.
Yeah. You know, and I think this is kind of a nuance that either we haven't brought out well enough or certain people I think have missed out on. They take us to say, well, you hate romance in games. You hate freak show characters.
You hate Shadowrun.
Yeah. That's but you know, with the exception of that one.
Slash cry.
These things aren't true. With freak show characters, the point of that show was these are dangerous. They can work, but there's a lot of potential pitfalls.
No, you hate them.
And I'll say the first thing why I said this about freak show characters. I was guilty of all the things that we said in Freak Show Characters and more. I always try and run Freak Show Characters in games, or at least I used to always.
Right. And it's the same thing with this. We think this is a wonderful idea. We're just warning you that this has potential pitfalls. Yeah. It's like gasoline. Gasoline does wonderful things in your life. If you play with it around matches, you get hurt. And so these are all the safety things. Don't huff the fumes. Right. Don't play with fire.
And we're not talking about the perks and flaws that are inherent into a game system. Say, Alternity. Alternity has perks and flaws.
Right. World those of Darkness is the big one. Yeah. It thrives on perks and flaws.
And those are balanced within the game. There's rules in them and stuff. We're saying if you play like World of Darkness and you have a character who takes all kind of perks and flaws, that's fine. And then he comes to you and he says, I want to make a deal. You should do it. These things go beyond the perks and flaws that are already inherent into the game. They're more meaningful. They're part of the character. They bring out the character. They should be aids to role-playing. They should really mean something within the plot. But my suggestion to everybody is what you said earlier. Start out small. If you've never done this or have only done the book variants of this concept we're trying to explain, start out small. One perk, one flaw. Have them write it into their character. Have them wrap the character around it, and then
you know
go from
another
there.
One I would suggest is don't allow the flaws to be fixed because
yeah, oh,
I've
that's
also,
a big one.
I've seen guys will say they're playing D&D. They're going to come into D&D and say, you know what, I want to have only one hand, and that's easy. You say, okay, fine, you can't use two-handed weapons, off-handed weapons, whatever, however you want to work that out in the game, and in return, I want this perk of whatever. Well, but then two games in, they're sitting on this huge lump of gold. They pay off some priest of whatever order to cast regeneration on
pop,
them.
They got pop, the hand.
There's the hand. Yeah. And now they're walking. So be sure the flaws you give them, think of in advance about how easily these are corrected.
Yeah.
Because if they can ditch all their flaws in the first game or the first couple games, I mean, if it's this big point of character development where over the course of a campaign you let them fix the flaw, maybe that's different because you're getting good story out of it. But don't let them just shed these things like cutting off an anchor and just move
also,
on.
Also, don't be afraid as the game goes on. You're well deep into a game. Pull a character aside. Say, hey, you want to make a deal now? I did that with Adam, and I turned his ass into a zombie. It was sort of like a half-zombie thing. It was great.
It was great.
The perk was every morning when the sun rose. It was like the spell was on him, and it was like trying to turn him into a zombie, and he was fighting it. The perk was he could never die. Well, I mean, he could never...
Let me tell you what the perk was, because you clearly don't remember. Yeah. D12 was the amount of hit die that we have. Everybody had D12. That was what a human had. Mm-hmm. The perk was that I had a D30 hit die, and every day I would roll it. And the closer it was to zero, that was the day that the zombieism was taking over. Right. And I would look like a zombie. The closer it was to 30, I was more human.
Yeah.
But
and
more
then,
human.
And when
than
you
human.
Went over 12, he was like really glowing and healthy and stuff. But Adam is a horrible roller, and I knew this. So there were several times.
Six. Two.
Oh, the 2 days were awesome.
All right, talking about character creation still. We talked about person flaws. I want to talk about something else that comes from outside the norm of character creation. Third-party supplements that wreck your game.
Disallowed.
D&D, by far, is the worst offender here.
Have you seen the epic classes for D&D?
I've seen...
They are ridiculous.
Dude, I have gotten to the point where with most character creation systems, I simply say, you must be these things from these books. Nothing else.
I can accept that.
I have seen very much with D&D, you sit down, everyone's playing a regular book class and raise, and this one guy digs up an obscure third-party source book, or even, honestly, a standard source book from Wizards of the Coast. They dig up the Fighter's Handbook or whatever, and they dig out of that some ridiculously imbalanced class that just completely throws the game.
One class I always thought was the assassin. Did you ever see that? They can shoot through walls to kill people. And it's like, what are you doing?
Some of the metagame stuff on these guys is just outrageous. It's just ridiculous. Shooting through walls. Even monks cannot die. You know, if you spec out your monk correctly, he never suffers naturally.
Yeah, and it gets worse. And some of these, I've seen people, I can't remember the names of the source books off the top of my head, but I've seen people come with these third-party source books. I say third-party, and once again, a lot of these aren't third-party.
Yeah, well, you're just talking supplements.
Well, yeah, by third-party, I guess I should be saying, like, peripheral supplement.
To me,
books
D&D that... is the worst example to give for a lot of role-playing games when you're talking about the rules. Because when we talk about role-playing games on this show, we are talking about R-O-L-E games. You take on a character, you play a role, and it's a deep, involved story. D&D, and of course, you can take any game, and you can have fun with it, and have deep, involved characters and a great storyline. D&D, in my opinion, lends itself to the combat.
Yeah,
it lends it. It was designed for dungeon crawl, and I think all these character classes are just designed for power gamers, for more and more and more powerful characters.
Yeah, I think that is very true, that a lot of them are designed around, I saw this badass guy do something in a book or in a movie, and I want to be that.
You never have the fighter take on the epic class of a merchant.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, a minstrel or
crier. Quivering palm of the monk.
Yeah.
They can hit you, and anytime in the next 24 hours, they can just tell you you're dead.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, dude, that's not on
that's
balance.
Great.
No, that's great.
That's great.
I think D&D, though, suffers from something else over most role-playing games, which is a glut of rules. Mm-hmm. That they have so many rules written over so many years by so many different people, and of course, on top of that, probably 100 times as much written by the fans, that it's really hard to control a lot of that. Mm-hmm. That you get these, it's not uncommon, you have this many source books, you're going to get real lemons in there.
Yeah.
I don't know there's a whole lot of advice
Day
to give
of the
here.
Comet.
This is mostly, flying saucer scenario for Dungeons and Dragons. And no, we're not joking if you've never seen this.
Knight of the Comet.
Conversation needs to end.
Knight of the Comet. You have your heroes slaying dragons, rescuing maidens.
And a flying saucer lands.
Flying saucer lands. And they get on. And they have their space. And we're not talking Spelljammer. We're talking metallic buttons, electronics, and computers. Fly your guys off into space.
No.
Aliens.
I reject this.
Lasers.
Nothing about this is good and righteous. Nothing about this is not right.
I think this is really, for me, more of a rant than a recommendation. The only recommendation is, folks, when you sit down and play a new game, be familiar with the rules and limit your players based on that. I think most people will accept those limitations as long as they're up front. But if you sit down and say, look, for example, when I run D&D, I always say straight up front, you must be a standard book class and race, no monks, no half-orcs. Always. That's the first line out of my mouth. Now, you guys at home can disagree with me on that and say, well, half-orc monks are just my favorite thing in the universe.
Screw you, I'm a half-orc monk.
But the point is, if you sit down up front and say that type of stuff, it stops these problems. I don't have to worry about somebody rolling into my game with some third-party strange supplement. I'm a snake eater of the wild. And
well, how much of that is the GM's
nice.
Fault, really?
No, if the GMs know about it and let it happen, it's the GM's fault. But I've been blindsided by this, where the player just shows up and says, I'm going to play something out of this supplement book. And I'm like, well, what is it? And either they play it down, like it's not that big a deal, or they misrepresent it. Like they tell me.
So you're talking about your players lie to you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, misrepresent, if not outright lie.
I would pick up their character sheet, the new one where it's all changed and all twinked out. I would look at it and go, you lied to me. And there would be this ripping sound as I slowly ripped it in half.
I like your turning the twink character into the NPC.
This is my new NPC. Yeah. And guess what? He hates you.
Right.
See, don't get into a fight with this guy because he's really powerful.
And Chad, I don't in any way, shape, or form disagree with you, but my take on it is I'd rather stop the drama before it starts.
Yeah.
And rather than even have that fight, because then they're, well, but it's balanced because of this, and this. It's like,
No, you're a twink. Yeah.
He can't wear white after Labor Day. I mean, that's balancing his death touch. I mean, but
death touch.
It's like, I'd just rather not even have
to deal
with this.
It's like
the
emo King Midas.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
All right.
You wear sandals after Labor Day?
Sigh.
Let's roll that into kind of a related topic, because we talked about getting rid of the tertiary source books. But in there I mentioned that with D&D I always start off with book standard races only, no half-orcs, no monks, limiting the classes and races for some purpose within the game, be it balance or be it whatever.
Yeah, I hate elves. No elves in my game.
I hate character classes, but that's an entirely different topic.
Yeah, well, you know what? You're the only one in the group who does, so goddammit. I'm playing a ranger.
All right, now, Adam, I don't know if you're being facetious. Are you serious? If today you are running a D&D game, you would not allow me to play an elf.
I would discourage you from playing an elf because I don't like them.
Is this personal axe to grind?
Yes.
Or is this, okay.
No,
he's a dwarf fan.
This has nothing to do with the game mechanics.
This is personal axe to grind.
Personally, when I run fantasy games or games with other races, well, let's keep it to fantasy games because sci-fi games are different. Sci-fi games, everyone wants, the aliens are more of a part of it. To me, a fantasy game, when you're talking about elves and dwarves and stuff, they're just humans. They're short, or humans that have long ears. Or humans that have green skin and tusks. It's
that's a preference of the GM, though.
It is.
I prefer.
Well, I could be that way with sci-fi games too.
You know what?
Just humans with green skin and tusks.
Guess what? One of my favorite sci-fi games doesn't have any aliens in it.
That's debatable.
Yeah, but here's the thing: my style of GMing and what, not even style of GMing, my personal preference on genres. I like really low fantasy. I like a fantasy where there aren't any dragons and there aren't any non-humans and that sort of thing.
You know, I really wanted to take a moral high ground on this, but running this through in my mind, with the monks, there's definitely a game balance issue. And if anyone sends me an email, why do you think monks are imbalanced? Look on our forums. We had a huge debate about this where I laid it out point by point.
Oh, it's going to be coming back up.
Go check that. I don't want to rewrite all this out.
Actually, if you don't think the monks are imbalanced, don't send an email.
But if the half-orc thing, though, the main reason I ban it is personal axe to grind. People that play half-orcs usually play the half-orc for the stat bonus.
Nice.
They want to play a big, dumb, super strong, super powerful combat wrecking machine at the cost of charisma.
Really? You ever seen anybody who wants to use a bow? Because they're always an elf. Guaranteed.
You know, I
have you ever known anyone who played a handsome orc?
I did. Yeah, I played it. I actually, and this was in a Chad Cover Your Ears Shadowrun game. I played an orc in there as an NPC that my players really loved that was a well-groomed, socialite orc.
See, I would allow that in my game.
And similarly, I played elves before that were really rugged individuals that did not have a bow in their inventory.
It's about your
approach. Didn't live in a tree.
It's about the approach to the game. The bad players we're talking about, when they sit down and make character, they have the blank character sheet in the books, and they come to, what am I going to play? I like bows.
I want to use a bow.
I like shooting. I like what's the best, yada, yada, yada. Okay, I can make an elf, and now here's the story behind the elf. Whereas the good players, I think, tend to be like, I want to be this kind of person.
Right.
And I like one of this kind of
history. I'd love to be an elf who has been rejected by his people, and because of that has taken an affinity
to
the human style of life.
Two hunting cats with him, and two twin swords, and so, sorry.
Solid plate bikini.
Is this Melina's last character?
Sorry.
Wow. Does she listen to the podcast?
No.
No? Okay, you're cool then. Actually, funny thing there in the previous podcast, Adam was mentioning that he writes on Phil all the time because Phil doesn't listen to the podcast, but we forgot that Phil is now working with a guy that I used to game with named Tom, and Tom does listen to the podcast, so Tom has been ratting us out to Phil every day.
You know what? Phil feels the bearded woman at a circus.
What?
You know what? I can't entirely disagree with that.
You look at him and you tell me he's not.
You guys are so mean.
I love Phil.
So mean.
Phil and I are tight, but he's like the bearded woman in the circus.
Phil's pretty weird.
Like Phil.
I love Phil.
He's a great guy.
Getting back on topic a little bit. Now we've given Tom something to tell Phil at lunch. So now they have something to discuss while they're running out for something to eat. Should GMs do that? And by that, I mean...
Rat out on Phil?
Or? No.
Yes.
I certainly think GMs could and should disallow things that either, number one, they're considered would imbalance the game, like with me with the monks, or number two, things they think that are just radically out of the proper feel of their game. For example, Kung Fu monks in medieval Europe.
Oh, no, that totally fits. It's in D&D, dude.
Let's talk, though, for a minute about the half-orcs and the elves. Should a GM, and let's not jump to the yes because we do it, should a GM disallow things just because of personal taste?
Yes.
I think so.
Not just because we do it, but I look at it from the perspective of, say, I'm running the game.
Okay.
Dawn wants to play an elf. We're playing a fantasy game. There's no elves in my fantasy.
Well, but that goes back to point one. This is not taste. Now you're talking about the setting. Let's say we were running, for whatever reason, a Forgotten Realms game. There are definitely elves there.
I would not run a Forgotten Realms game for a moment.
Yeah. Run with this. There could be elves, okay? Uh-huh. Like Adam's talking about, or I'm talking about, like, I don't allow half-orcs, okay? Half-orcs are definitely in D&D, but I don't allow them.
And they're in Forgotten Realms, too, and you run a lot of Forgotten Realms.
So the question is, should that be done? Should a GM be allowed to disallow something, not for any reason of setting or rules, but just because it irritates the ever-living crap out of them when people play?
Yes.
Depends on how
it's
much of
it. It's my world.
Depends on explain how much
that.
Of
it. Explain that. I don't disagree with you, but explain that a little bit.
What do you mean? I created this world. It's my story. You are a character in my story. You will abide by my rules. You're going to abide by my rules in combat, in which I can kill your character.
I think I would take the opposite side. I would take a qualified no, GM should not. And I say no because I think the GM, you've got to allow the players to have some fun. This is not your game. This is everyone's game. You're running it, but this is everyone's game. You should allow them to have what fun they can reasonably be allowed to have. Now, I say qualified no because I would say, however, the game master ultimately, more than anyone else, has to consistently be interested in the story and has to consistently be excited about what the players are playing. So if the players are playing something the GM just cannot palate for whatever reason, I think it would be better for the players to not be allowed to play it from the beginning than for the GM to be picking on or ostracizing that character or gritting their teeth every time it's Kel'Thalon's action.
Oh, that is exactly how it is. I wouldn't have a problem if they played an elf, okay? I'm an elf. And then here comes the elf cramming down the elf culture down my throat. No, not in my game. You are an elf. You have pointed ears. You're good with a bow. That's the end of your elfness.
Tell me what your elf eyes see.
Oh, that is the worst line in the second movie. I wanted to gouge out my tongue.
Gouge out your human tongue.
My human tongue. My non-pointed tongue.
Yeah, the problem was not what your elf eyes saw. It's what my human ears heard.
I think that it's acceptable for a GM to disallow things based on taste as long as he's not a jerk about it. If the GM is saying, I really dislike that in my games, I have a thing against it, and I'm not going to run it very well, that's fine. If the person saying it's like, the GM's saying, I don't like you playing this sort of thing.
Right.
You know, or it's like, I'll allow orcs, but this guy's always kind of, I don't like how he plays orcs, so you can't play an orc.
What is an elf but a human with a plus two dexterity?
For a while.
I agree.
Let me take this little story and kind of tie it into this. For a little bit, I was working for MasterCard here in St. Louis, and while I was working there, I was actually an independent contractor, so I wasn't working for anybody. But the guy that generally I reported to used to be an officer on a U.S. submarine, obviously in the Navy. And he said that what would happen is that while they were out at sea, the commander of the submarine, because you're in this tiny little world, so far from anyone, having minimal contact with anyone else, would become the whole submarine. He would turn it into this microcosm of his own views because there was no one to argue with him, no one to resist him, and everything got run by every little idiosyncrasy and every little nitpick this guy had became the law by which the submarine was run. Now, I think there is a danger that a game master can do that in their games, where every little axe they have to grind, every little noise they have, grinds down to the characters to the point that really the game and the characters and everything else are what the Game Master would have created anyway.
Yeah.
And so you have destroyed the game experience. And that's why I said my answer is a qualified no. There have been times in my games where I have, someone's come to me and said, I want to play this. And I've been about to say no. And I think about it. It's like, you know, is there any really good reason I'm saying that? Or does it just irritate the piss out of me when this guy plays a thief? And it's like, yeah, it just really just irritates me when this guy plays a thief. So it's like, okay. But
what about when you have the power gamer who always wants to play the heavy weapons
right.
guy?
Right, and in this case...
Every time, and it's the same
this
guy.
Is why I said qualified no, because I think you can do a disservice to the players by allowing them to play, by allowing them to fall into stereotypes, I think, or allowing them to fall into ruts. And similarly, you can do a disservice to the game by allowing them to play something that irritates you to the point that the game master begins to hate his own game. And if a player comes in annoyed with the game for a session, no big deal, or just a little more quiet. But that game master needs to come generally excited every single setting.
We're putting out pretty strong opinions about this, but have any of you guys ever actually had that happen? Where a game where you've wanted to create a character of a certain kind and the game master said, no, I'm not going to allow it, and it wasn't for matters of it's too powerful or it's too stupid or...
I can't say that I have in a very, very long time, but honestly, there have only been, outside of me, two GMs I've played under even in the past several years, which is you, Chad, and Kevin. So I don't know that really I have enough experiences just in general, because 90% of the games I'm involved in, I'm running. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not, like I said, it's one or two with you and then one or two with Kevin. Well, it's actually been quite a few with Kevin, but I run more often than he does. And Kevin's pretty permissive. And Chad, I think you and I are similar enough in taste that you don't have any problem with what I play.
I think the one game we played was years ago was Nightbreed or something.
Yeah, well, no, you ran recently
bad 80s sitcom.
It was actually a bad 80s horror movie.
Yeah, it was actually had a pretty good role-playing game come out of it. Yeah. But, no, Chad, recently...
the look on your face.
Horror.
Priceless.
No, but recently you ran that Battletech game.
Yeah.
Where I played that guy who's kind of like an independently contracted mercenary working
terrible
for
game.
Some corporation. Well, the point is, though, this is not the game we're talking about here. I can think of the reverse situation where I, as a GM, like I said, have disallowed things and later thought, you know, there really was no good reason for me to do that.
Have I ever done that to you guys?
You've never rejected
someone. I don't think so,
characters.
But I mean, I play pretty tame characters most of the time.
I think Bard!
I think I've restricted like Phil's characters.
I know you've restricted Phil's characters.
I seen that's the qualified
the
no.
Yeah. I mean, because he's a power gamer. Again,
he twinks his characters.
Yeah, and he twinks his characters, and sometimes I just don't allow it.
See, but I guess though,
sometimes I do.
In those cases, I'd say we've gone above and beyond personal taste.
Right, it's a game balance issue.
We have now had issues of game balance or game depth. At any rate,
I don't think I've really ever dealt with this, and I don't gym that often. I hate elves.
Yeah. The burning passion.
I'm going to play an elf in your game now. If you ever run a game, play an elf.
I just love
it. And I'll tell you what my elf eyes see. Talking about character creation still.
Let's move on. Let's
coming
cut
off
that off.
Coming off that, talking about character creation. This was kind of a rare situation, Chad, that you and I were in, and Dawn as well, many years ago. Yeah. Adam,
the old crew.
You were born yet, Adam.
This is back when you were still a suckling... You lamb.
You were going to say suckling pig.
No, I actually was trying to. I was trying to work.
No, that's what you are now.
I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom while you guys have your old geriatric time.
Have fun. Don't fall in.
Several years ago, it just so happened, Chad, that you and I were playing in a group that had three or four other people outside of you, me, and Dawn. Everyone in that group except you and I was an artist of some caliber.
I don't disbelieve you. That sounds like a horrible
game. Of some caliber,
game.
Generally low.
Well, I said,
oh, you're talking. I was thinking character class. No. I was still on the character. But it's like you were
the
hit
players.
Man. I was the Decker. Everyone else, Picasso.
No. I'm not talking about the characters. Yeah, that would be a terrible game. And you know, honestly, what would make it a terrible game is probably the Decker and the Hitman more than the
I know, exactly.
But, Chad, I'm shaking his head. There's probably a lot of people shaking their heads right now.
Man,
but no.
I'm really glad I was born in the 80s.
Yeah. The players, everyone but you and I, was an artist of at least some skill level that could do, even if they weren't great, did a hell of a lot better than Stickmin, okay? These were people that had taken art classes and were into this as a hobby and stuff.
Whereas you and I couldn't even draw Stickmin.
Yeah, I mean,
terrible.
I could do kind of layouts to explain this is where I'm standing on the map, and that was really about it.
Oh, but Chad, your Stickmin are so cute.
Yeah.
They all had these great big beards.
They did. It was awesome.
But one of the things that came out of that And in fact, I believe there's actually one or two campaigns where this was a requirement. Every single character had a character sketch. And, no, it was actually kind of cool. The reason I liked the character art was because, and this is largely personality thing, that when I'm in these games, I try to visualize them. That for me, it helps if I can visually create some sort of a scene of what's going on. And kind of like when I'm reading a novel. When I'm reading a novel mentally, it's like watching TV. I see this image of everything unfolding in my head. I know there are other people who do this. There are people who don't. There are people who just read for content. With the games, it was nice because I would get these descriptions from people that tended to shoot one of the two extremes. It was three words of generic man, or it was 20 minutes of a description of every single tiny bit of this character.
And he has a freckle on his left buck cheek.
We were playing a homegrown game that actually this is the one we're going to be using for our game design series. There was a guy we know who made a character in it who on one leg had this like his like whole left leg or something was covered with these different colored bandanas he had tied up and down this leg. Or just kind of a
1984. Well, coming back at you.
Here's the thing. All right. Whether you like it or not, here was the thing. He had them all figured out. And we're like, okay, what does everyone's character look like first game? All right, my guy looks like this, wearing this, kind of holds himself like this, got to him. 45 minutes later.
Of bandana.
And this bandana and that bandana. And he's dressed like this and his hair is like this, but not like that. Have you guys seen this movie with this one guy? It's kind of like that, except not so much. Let me take that back. Actually, have you seen this TV show? And it just went on and
on. Oh, my God.
New characters.
The nice thing about character art is it's quick. Plus, I've always gotten a kick out of creating a character and watching somebody interpret it artistically. Somebody else. See what they hear from what I was said and how they draw that out. I've always found that interesting.
I remember seeing an ad in the back of Dragon Magazine. I'll draw your character. All you need to do is just send a $20 check and a description of what equipment you have, what armor you're wearing. Right. What something sword you're using?
Something we did in one of our games. We went out and we found images. Did a Google image of the character we wanted.
This is awesome.
The closest I've ever come to that was I was playing with one guy, and this was years ago, who was a big movie buff. And so he would ask me at the start of every game to name a character in any movie that my character looked like. And, of course, it wouldn't be necessarily even from the same time period. So it was not in terms of what armor he's wearing, but just facial appearance, haircut, this is what my guy looks like. All right, well, I think that's enough for the loose ends on character creation.
Did we have an hour?
Yeah. Believe it or not.
Oh, man, too much Bud Light for me.
Yeah. Your head's spinning, the clock is spinning.
Yeah, everything is spinning because someone needs to go to the bathroom.
All right. Well,
stat.
You go potty. Everyone else, we will catch you next time.
And if you have to go potty, go for it.
There you go. This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its hosts. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.